And welcome back. Is the holiday season a time of good cheer for you, or is it a time perhaps for something quite different, a time that depresses you? Perhaps it's a combination of the two. We'll be talking about these two extremes on the emotional spectrum in this segment. Joining me in studio is Tim Bono, Assistant Dean and Lecturer in Psychology at Washington University. Tim, nice to see you again.
It's great to see you too, Don. Thanks.
I want to cheer things up a little bit after that awful story about the Holocaust that was just read. But, I think it's widely believed, Tim, that this time of year is probably the key time when people are likely to trigger depression, the blues, what have you. Is this really the time for that?
Yeah, it turns out that this is the time for that. There are a lot of factors that are present during the winter months that can affect our overall psychological health. And I would say that key among them has to do with the amount of sunlight that we have exposure to. That as the days are getting shorter and shorter at this time of the year, we have less light that's entering our system. And that has been associated to be the cause of a number of the symptoms that are associated with mood disorders, such as with the winter blues, and more seriously, with seasonal affective disorder.
Explain what seasonal affective disorder is, if you would.
Sure. So it's ultimately a form of depression, but it is bound by the season. So the symptoms of seasonal affective disorder include the same kinds of symptoms that we see with major depression. It's things like pervasive sadness, anxiety, loss of interest, loss of motivation to do things, changes in appetite or sleep. But what characterizes it as seasonal affective disorder is that there's evidence that the onset of this disorder is aligned with the beginning of a particular season, usually winter, and then it persists throughout that season. And then when that season changes over to spring, those symptoms will improve. And then the person is psychologically healthy for the rest of the year. And then when winter comes again, those symptoms emerge again and send that person into that depressive state.
So that is one key element in this time of year and people feeling blues and feeling the blues and feeling depression. I would have thought that a big part of that, though, would have been the fact that it's a time of great joy and people are having a good time and they're eating good food and all the rest of it, but they are not experiencing those pleasures.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of differences from one person to another. It's not the case that everybody becomes depressed or everybody comes down with the blues, but we do see an increase in the incidence of that happening across the general population. Because as you say, there are a lot of things that will increase people's emotional well-being. There's a lot of stuff to look forward to. There's a lot of coming together and reconnecting with friends and family members. There's a lot of opportunity for pro-social behavior during the holidays. And so for a lot of people, they will experience an increase in their overall mood. But for some, it goes the other direction. And I think that a part of it, in addition to just the reduction in light, has to do with the expectations that people have as they enter the holiday season. There's a lot of messages out there in society and culture about what the holidays are supposed to be like, what this time of year should feel like. And if people's reality, if that doesn't match up to their expectations, that can cause them to see a reduction in their overall mood and well-being. In fact, there was a study that came out a couple of years ago showing that among people who were checked into a psychiatric hospital around the winter holidays, one of the key causes that brought them there had to do with loneliness and being without family.
That's exactly the point I was just going to bring up. Being alone has to be a trigger.
Yes, because we know that being alone itself, being without a strong social support system, that will drive down a person's emotional health and well-being. But especially during the holidays when there are such messages, such expectations about being together with family, or you see on TV or in the movies the big family gatherings around the table, that can really exacerbate the feelings of loneliness that a person might otherwise feel because now they're seeing everybody else experiencing the happiness that comes from being with others. And so it just creates more of a contrast effect from their experience compared to what others are enjoying at that time.
You know, I've done interviews of this type over the years. And one of the things that keeps coming up, and we've had some discussions here amongst our staff about this, was the fact that people assume that it's Christmas time, this time of year, where the triggers really come in. But I've been told in the past that actually it's more so in the springtime, a time of renewal, a time of color. Things are starting all over again. and people who feel that it's not going to meet their own personal expectations, that's a real trigger in and of itself.
Well, if you look at the data on something like suicide rates, we do have evidence from data that's been collected by the Centers for Disease Control as well as other people who look at this, that there is an increase in suicide during the springtime. And given that we see an increase in that in the springtime, even though there's an increase in the blues and depression during the winter months, admittedly that remains something of a puzzle to scientists, but there have been a number of ideas that have been introduced that could explain that. One of them is that we know that when people are in the depths of depression, they are completely lacking motivation to do anything. They're not motivated to get up out of bed. They're not motivated to go into work or take care of other basic daily tasks. And they're also not motivated to act on ideology like the desire to end their life. But there are studies showing that for some depressed people, they're at greatest risk to commit suicide during the initial rebound from their depression because they're getting that motivation back to then act on things, on ideas that may have been in their head all along. The other thing is that it also presents something of a contrast effect that so many people do seem to get a boost to their overall mood, that not everybody does that. And so when they see other people who are happier and planning their vacations and looking forward to stuff that the springtime enables, again, it's about that contrast effect that because they are feeling some element of sadness or loneliness that compared to others who at least on the surface seem like they're doing pretty well, that contrast effect can exacerbate those negative feelings.
So we're both right. Those who would argue that the Christmas season is a real trigger and those who would say that springtime is the time are also correct.
Yeah, well, I would say that there's a lot of individual differences, although across the board, we do have data to suggest that there's more of an increase during the winter months. But that also depends on where you live, even in the country, because it has a lot to do with the exposure to light that we have. And if you look at a map of the United States and plot the rates of seasonal affective disorder, it corresponds pretty well with the latitude, just simply your distance from the equator. In southern Florida, the rates of seasonal affective disorder are quite low in comparison to, say, northern Minnesota or Alaska, where the days are so short, they're getting very little daylight. And there I've seen the estimates that like 1 in 10 people come down with seasonal affective disorder.
And I understand the suicide rate in Sweden is very high during the winter months because it's dark all the time.
Yes, and that fits with what we know about just the impact that light has on our overall well-being. It turns out that light does a lot more for us than simply enable us to see, but it activates a neural circuit in our brain that regulates the release of neurochemicals that affect things like our mood and our energy levels during the day and our sleep patterns. And so a disruption in the amount of light that we get during the day will affect other outcomes that are important for our health and well-being.
I want to invite members of the listening audience to come into this conversation if you'd like to. We're talking about depression during the holidays and happiness. We'll be talking about that as well. Give us a call, 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd like to send us a tweet, do so at STL on air. Tim, what about the issue of stress at this time of year? I mean, if there's any time of year when stress is at a very high level, this would be it, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of hustle and bustle that takes place during the holiday season. People are planning a lot of parties. That requires a certain amount of willpower. There's also a lot of stuff that happens at the end of the year for businesses as they're preparing final reports. So for some people, they experienced increased stress levels just in terms of their day-to-day work lives. And then there's also the stress of a topic that was on this show a couple weeks ago of having to see family or friends who you maybe only see during the holidays, mm-hmm. and maybe there's some tension there. And that can also create some anxiety for people. Again, during what is sort of branded as this happy feel-good season, I think there's a song, it's the most wonderful time of year, yeah. But it's not always the most wonderful time of year for everybody because there are these other stressors in terms of planning parties, the stresses at work. And that combined with the shorter days can take its toll on people.
What about the issue of happiness? Is there one level of happiness or are there gradations from being happy to being joyful? And what is the difference between happiness and joy?
Yeah, so when we think about happiness, we generally think about it being on a continuum. And when we are studying happiness from a psychological perspective, the goal of research in happiness or the classes that we teach on happiness never have as their aim to make people, quote, happy. Instead, I think a much more useful approach for us in the pursuit of happiness is instead of asking, how can I be happy, to ask, how can I be happier? What are the things, what are the behaviors or the mindsets that I can be incorporating into my life today so that in light of all of the external circumstances or perhaps barriers that are outside of my control that could be impeding my ability to achieve happiness, what are the things I can be doing to become happier as I go through life? That it's not just a destination. Happiness is not this point over there. And as soon as I achieve the correct salary and get the right job and live in the right kind of house and the right kind of neighborhood and have the right kind of romantic partner, then I'll be happy, whereas right before that point I was unhappy. A much more useful approach is to say, all right, what are the things I can actually be doing to become happier on a day-to-day basis?
And what about joy? I mean, is that just another word for happiness?
Well, you know, there are different ways that psychologists conceptualize positive emotional experiences. And this is the topic of great debates, and people get around at conferences and spend hours yelling back and forth about how to conceptualize this. Usually when we're looking at different variations on positive emotion, we're looking at both the valence, whether something is positive or negative, as well as the sort of physiological component of that, whether it's a high arousal emotion or a low arousal emotion. So if something is pleasant, or if you're calm, then that's positive, but it's low arousal, whereas something like excitement or joy is also positive, but it incorporates more of a bodily response, that it sort of gets your adrenaline going, which can then motivate you to sort of spread that joy to others.
And what about swings from happiness to not so happy? Maybe not full-fledged depression, but, you know, kind of like on a bungee cord.
Yeah, well, we know that you know, it's part of the human experience for us to have good days and bad days. I have a colleague in the field who says, you know, there's only two kinds of people who never get sad or lonely or frustrated or depressed, and those are sociopaths and the dead. Everybody else, you know, all psychologically healthy people, we are going to experience that full range of human emotion. So I think that it's important to sort of give yourself that permission. When one of the worst things that we can do for ourselves when we're having a bad day is to try to undo that negative emotion and say, why am I feeling sad? Why am I feeling lonely? Why am I feeling anxious? Because then you get the secondary emotion. You feel bad because you're feeling bad. And it's important to acknowledge that all of us from time to time wake up and we just sort of have an off day where we're just sort of feeling bad or we're feeling lonely. If those negative emotions become so severe and persist for such a long period of time that they are interfering with our ability to carry out our daily tasks, that's where we might want to seek professional help or think about something that we can modify about our daily lives. But, you know, if you're going along and you just have a bad day once in a while, that's part of life, to have those swings from good days to bad days. And part of the positive psychology movement is not about taking bad days away, because those negative emotions have utility. They can provide important insights into things that we might need to change about ourselves. But instead, the purpose of positive psychology is to think about how we can shift ourselves on that emotion continuum over to the more positive side to have relatively more happier days than negative.
What else can people do if they feel themselves swinging back and forth?
Sure. Well, I think that at the cornerstone of psychological health is our physical health. We have to take care of our bodies in order to take care of our minds. I'm a strong proponent of the idea that happiness is a full body experience. So there are some key ways that we can take care of our bodies. One is by examining our diet, by taking a look at just the food that we're eating. We want to make sure that we are eating a good portion of fruits and vegetables, whole grains, calcium-rich foods, other food that are high in the vitamins and nutrients that are important. And at this time of the year in particular, people are bringing in sweets to work. There are lots of holiday parties, and it's great to indulge those from time to time. But you want to take extra effort to ensure that the other meals you're having at other times have those good foods for you, because those will affect things like your stress levels and the overall energy that you have during the day. The other two ways that I think are really important to take care of our physical selves that ultimately then translate to our psychological well-being. Number one is exercise. That's another thing that often is reduced at this time of year. So making sure that you're prioritizing getting out and engaging in some sort of physical activity. And whatever that works for you, if you want to take long walks during the day, go out jogging, yoga, whatever it is. But exercise releases neurochemicals that are essentially the body's natural feel-good chemicals that have been shown to improve our mood if we incorporate that on a regular basis. So exercise is really important. And then the third one, which is also extremely important, that is also affected by the daylight, is the amount of sleep that we're getting. Getting a good night's sleep on a regular basis turns out to be a really important behavior for our overall health. And this is one where a lot of people say, oh gosh, I'm so busy, I just don't have time, I've got too much work to do to get enough sleep. And if you feel that way, you're in good company. I think it was Thomas Edison who once said, sleep is a criminal waste of time, because his philosophy was you could be doing so much other productive work instead of just wasting your time sleeping. But just over the last few years, there's been this proliferation of research done by neuroscientists showing what's happening in our brains when we sleep. It turns out that over the course of a night's sleep, our brains are incredibly active, and they're doing all sorts of work that have implications both for our ability to regulate our moods, but also our cognitive abilities to stay on task toward our work the next day. So if we haven't had a full night's sleep, it's reasonable to expect that the next day we're going to be a little bit edgy, a little bit temperamental, not going to be able to maintain our focus as much as we would otherwise. And the reason for that is because we didn't give our brains enough time to do the work that they needed to do to then translate to our emotional and cognitive health. So diet, exercise, and sleep are three really important ways to take care of our bodies, to then take care of our psychological health.
Well, this is right in line with an email we have from Colin, who writes, what about members of society who work a night shift? I'm assuming the same type of issues related to the winter season and shorter days has a long-term impact on those working the night shift.
Yeah, that's true. There are some people for whom the demands of their lives or of their careers mandate that they are sleeping during the day and they are awake during the night. And that will affect their circadian rhythms, which is essentially the body's internal clock. And it can also then take its toll on their psychological health. So for those people also, the same things apply. To the extent that they are able to get sleep, or rather to get daylight when they can, depending on when they have to go into work, giving themselves exposure to daylight is one way to halt the production of a particular hormone that's called melatonin, which we sometimes call the Dracula hormone because it comes out when it's dark. But if people are having difficulty adjusting their schedule, exposure to light is one way to sort of ward off those feelings of tiredness or sluggishness because, again, it's activating that neural circuit that's halting the production of that neurochemical that affects how tired and sluggish we are. So, yeah, yes, if you have a night shift, it can affect your psychological health, but there are certainly behaviors that you can incorporate to sort of minimize the impact.
Does switching from daylight saving time to standard time and vice versa have an impact?
It most certainly does. And I have a colleague in the biology department at WashU who says we should just do away with it because our bodies don't know what time it is on the clock. Our bodies have this internal clock that govern what time we want to wake up and not. And so at that time of year where we have to switch either forwards or backwards, that can affect our circadian rhythm. And also it's affecting just the release of those other neurochemicals that can affect mood and other aspects of well-being.
Getting back to the happiness depression, we've got about a minute and a half left. Getting back to that subject, the family situation in which one member or a loved one or a friend may be depressed or seemingly depressed. What can one do to try to help?
Yeah, if you've got somebody in your life who you think might be depressed, the first thing to take into consideration is to try to figure out if they themselves have awareness that they could be suffering from something. Because in order to get somebody to change a behavior, they first have to understand and recognize that there's something that they need to change. So if you think that somebody's depressed, you want to very gently draw their attention to objective behaviors that you've noticed. It's not a good idea to play the role of therapist and say, you know, you seem really sad. I think you've got seasonal affective disorder. You should go see a psychiatrist. That could backfire. Instead, a much more productive approach is to say, hey, you know, I've noticed that lately you haven't really seemed like yourself, or lately you haven't come out to hang out with us as much as you used to, and I'm concerned about that. And see what their reaction to that is. See if they've noticed that themselves. And if you can bring them to understand that there are changes in their mood and in their behavior, that can sort of be the gateway to then providing them resources or giving them suggestions for things they can incorporate into their life to strengthen their overall psychological health.
In 15 or 20 seconds, what's the best advice you can give for people to have a happy holiday season?
Engage yourself with as much social support as you possibly can. Enjoy it. If things don't turn out well, just focus on the things that are turning out well, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you, too. Thank you so much, Tim Bono, for being with us. Tim is the assistant dean and lecturer in psychology at Washington University. Very informative. Thank you so much. I think we helped some folks with this discussion. Thank you, Tim. Tomorrow in St. Louis on the Air, we'll look back at major legal issues of 2015 with our Legal Roundtable panel of experts. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.